Welcome to Outspoken Voices, a podcast by and for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer parents, people with LGBTQ parents, future parents, and everyone else who is part of our family journeys. I'm your host, Emily McGranahan, and I am the Director of Family Engagement with Family Equality Council. Like most kids, I tried team sports when I was growing up, and while I hopefully or mostly didn't embarrass myself on the field or the court, I never really excelled. Both my moms came to all my games, being loud and proud parents. And today I'm a runner, which would have seemed absolutely impossible to my high school or even college self. And I still love crossing the finish line of a race to see one of my moms cheering me on. With me today is someone that many of us have cheered for over the course of an impressive career as a professional soccer player. Lori Lindsay is a retired U.S. women's national soccer team midfielder who played for several professional teams in the U.S. and Australia as well. Today, Lori is a performance coach and U.S. Soccer League analyst. And I got to hear some of Lori's story a few years ago at a Pride event and was just blown away to learn that not only had I been cheering on an out professional athlete, but also a fellow person with LGBTQ parents to boot. So welcome, Lori.
Thank you. I love that intro.
So I ask everybody as we get started, it's one of my favorite questions to ask, who is in your family and how was it formed?
Yes, good question. Who is in my family? Well, when you ask that, what do you mean by that?
It really means anything. From childhood family, chosen family, family today. So it really means whatever family means to you.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, I was very fortunate in terms of just supportive, immediate family. My mom, which I've spoken about quite a bit, is a lesbian, and she's been married for about 30 years, I think, actually, this year.
Wow.
So, yes, they met they've been together for 30 years, mm-hmm. I should say. And then my dad has remarried as well many years ago. So just so much love and support for the most part, right, in my immediate family. And then just in terms of, I think of friends as family as well. And when you play in team sports, it's a blessing and a curse to have friends that are close to you, but then also live across the world and country. Mm-hmm. So everyone's sprinkled around. But yeah, so immediate family, I would say, and I have a brother and sister who are in Boston and Seattle, and then friends sprinkled all around the world. And so, as I said, it is really like a blessing mm-hmm. and a curse. And the fact that, like, especially like Megan Rapinoe and I, best friends for a long time now, but she lives in Seattle, so across the country. And when we were playing, we would see each other all the time. And now it's few and far between that we actually see mm-hmm. each other in person. So, but thankfully for technology today, it can work. So, but it also makes it exciting because when there's reunions and stuff, then there are shenanigans left and right.
So you mentioned your own family has multiple generations. I'm really interested. You mentioned your mom and her partner have been together for 30 years. That's a lot of social and societal change that they must have seen and that you're now seeing as well. As a family who has spans different generations, do you talk about how things have changed for your different family members over the years?
Yeah, very much so. So I've talked a lot about my mom being a lesbian publicly as well. I was born in 1980. My parents divorced in 1982. My mom came out as a lesbian. And mm-hmm. really, that's all I remember. And essentially, yeah, it was pretty powerful. So when I think of my mom in the 80s, right, or even the 90s in Indiana, and coming out and having that, like, that being brave to be able to come out and live her true self, right, is quite remarkable, especially when it meant like losing us and not necessarily getting us in terms of full custody, right, and all of that stuff. So from such an early age, I saw sacrifices and the commitment to again, be true to oneself.
So what has it been like then for your family and conversations about being out today? You know, you've spoken about this, you know, as a professional athlete, you've had a bit more of a platform than others. Did you talk with your own mom about that you were going to out her in some ways when you spoke? I know I personally had those conversations with my parents, you know, one of whom was never out at work as a public school teacher. So that as I got older and I started speaking out more about my family, that was something I had to check in with them about. Is that something you've also had with like talking with them about that?
Yes and no. And, you know, so from an early age, you know, I knew that I was gay and it was whether I could articulate it or not. I mean, as a soccer player, there's a period of time, especially in high school and then even early stages of like college before I came out, I was kind of like, I'm not coming out like at that time. Right. I knew that there was always going to be a time for me to come out. And then eventually I just couldn't deny it anymore. Right. Like everyone's like, okay, Lori, we know. And so, but in terms of that, which we know a lot of people struggle with, right. Being displaced from their homes or just, not acknowledged as part of a family. And I knew deep down that wasn't going to be the case for me. So in terms of that, I was incredibly fortunate. But then to get to the part that you're asking about in terms of once I started to speak about it publicly, really what came about with that is later in my years with the national team, I realized how stifling that environment could be. And then also how we had such myself, and I think I would argue that everybody in that platform has a responsibility to speak out about whatever they feel passionate about, right? And for me, it was, listen, I'm a lesbian and we need positive role models. We need young kids to feel that this is okay, right? And that it's all okay and it will be okay. And so I felt that responsibility. So when I came, and for that responsibility, though, came from the fact that, like, that's what how I saw my mom living, right? Is even as tough as it would have been coming out in the early 80s, she was never denying who she was. She was, people knew at work, right? And my stepmom, Susan, my mom's wife, knew she was out, right? They have been very active in their liberal churches, right? And so it was never anything that was hidden. And it was always very much a part of my childhood and my life throughout. It obviously still is today. So there wasn't a really need to say, hey, mom, I'm going to speak about this. In fact, it was like a natural part of the story, right? It'd almost be weirder if I didn't speak about it.
So I think about growing up within a queer community. Those were the role models I saw. That was the culture I was immersed in. And that was who was raising me and loving me. So to not talk about it always felt like this very uncomfortable betrayal of not only my family, but like my own story, like my reality. But at the same time, I knew I had to be respectful of my parents and where and when they felt safe about being out. So there were times when I was just ready to start shouting it from the rooftops and they were less comfortable.
That's an interesting point. And I actually really love that you're like ready to shout it from the mountaintops, and but you needed to be mindful because, you know, mine was kind of the opposite. It wasn't that I was afraid to shout it from the mountaintops necessarily, but early on, it was almost like I had these two lives, right? I was like primarily or majority lived with my dad and stepmom. And that was like soccer Lori, right? It was like, this is what I do. I play soccer. I started to become known in my town in Indianapolis in high school. And then like every other weekend, I'd go see my mom. And I was like holidays and like New Year's banging pots and pans at New Year's with like 50 lesbians, right? And it was almost like the tale of two worlds. Like it was like soccer Lori here. And then when I go to my mom's, it was like, yeah, it was still soccer Lori in a way. Quotations around it, but also I felt very much at home in that environment. And it wasn't until like obviously I started to like understand myself and learn that I became more comfortable because my mom and Susan were always comfortable, right? They were always going to be out. They were marching in pride, all of this stuff. So it was more about me coming into my own and finally becoming more of like a whole person and you know, navigating myself and using that platform or, and just speaking out and talking more.
Were there other LGBTQ athletes then, or like teammates that you were meeting?
Oh yeah, especially once I got to college and then was playing, you know, professionally. Absolutely. I mean, it just, at that yep. point in time, everyone is kind of like coming into their own, figuring their own stuff out, right? And there's also the old saying, you don't win any championships if there's not a lesbian on your team. So, yeah, I still live by that one. And that's another area too that I'm, whenever I look back at my career, that I was very fortunate about, because it was always an accepting part. And I think, especially when I was playing too, I mean, mm-hmm. if I look at the national team, myself, Megan Rapinoe, Abby, right? Like all of us, we're comfortable with ourselves.
It's really wonderful to see how many women on the national soccer team especially are so out and proud and, you know, with their partners, with their wives. It just is so different from when I was younger, and I get so excited to see like kids cheering on these fantastic role models. Cause I'm like, yes, I wish I had that. I wish I had known that was possible, because I don't believe there was anybody that I was aware of as being an out athlete when I was younger.
Yeah, exactly. And that really just goes back to kind of like the reason why I wanted to come out publicly. Right. And so, I mean, essentially, like, long story short is like, we were coming back from the 2011 World Cup and Megan and I were on the plane, and you could just realize that kind of, that tournament, the 2011 World Cup in Germany, kind of set the precedence, especially here in the U.S. I mean, prior to that, we've had, you know, a lot of ebbs and flows in the game. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Mia Hamm and Julie Foudy and all those put soccer on the map for us, and for mm-hmm. fought for the ways that so many of our current players can make a living, right, and the lives that they have through soccer. But it was one, seeing my mom and how she was living her life, but then also just seeing how, okay, clearly there's a lot of athletes, there's a lot of people that aren't coming out. There's fear, right? There's fear around this. There's, and that's not what we want to put out in terms of for these young kids that need to see this. And like, I was fortunate to have this role model right in front of me as my mom. And so how can we step up and start to, I guess, quote unquote, normalize this for society. And so when Megan and I were flying home, we both looked at each other and it was like, yes, this is something we have to do. And Out Magazine had approached her to do a spread before the 2012 Olympics. And it was like, yes, this is what you have to do. You have such a bigger platform than I do in terms of like celebrity status, right? Like, do this. This is going to be massive. And one by one, right? And I'm not saying that we were the pioneers by any means, because, oh my goodness, with the people that have come before us that are fighting the fights behind the scenes. But that's why it's even more important to step up. And if you are mm-hmm. in the spotlight, to say who you are, because I mean, if you look at even the men's sports, right, it's like mm-hmm. one male athlete in Major League Soccer is out in all of the major sports. And so obviously right. there's still fear, there's still some stigma behind that in terms of coming out, right? And so the more that one by one, everyone can start to like do their part, live their true self, then it helps massively.
I'm really interested in your experience with, you know, your team as a family, but it's also with sports, it's something you want to share with your family, especially if you need support after an injury or after a loss. Or, you know, I'm thinking about in 2015 at the World Cup, you know, where Abby Wambach probably like kissed her wife and it was on TV, and it was like so exciting to see, because, you know, you want to share that joy with somebody who loves you, you know, especially after a win. Does that feel like, does that ring true to you of one motivator for being an out athlete is just being able to share that joy or share those challenges without censoring yourself in some way?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think I think more and more we're seeing athletes wanting to bring their full selves to their work, right? And before it was very much like, oh, you stick to your sports, like we're not going to talk about politics. And it's like, well, no, this is not, I mean, we're seeing that with Kaepernick, right? And we're seeing that with these athletes coming up and speaking, because speaking out about what is true for them. And I think when you're, anytime that you're stifling yourself or holding yourself back, then there's always some sort of repercussions, whether that's just internally or what, right? But yeah, I mean, I think to be able to share who you are and bring yourself fully is what we all aim for, right? No matter what work you're in.
You decided pretty young, or you knew at what, you know, when you were younger, that pursuing, you know, an elite college and professional career in soccer was like what you wanted to do. Speaking of family, you know, how did your family sort of react to that or support or, you know, question that? Because, you know, that was an incredible amount of your time and passion and body to be dedicating to that goal, to that pursuit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, that's a couple of things I would say is, one, I get the question so much, like, would you do that again? Like if and when you have kids, and I'm like, hell no, like, on the road so much. But in some regards, I think my parents loved it just as much, even though they might joke about it now. I think there's a couple things. They were 100% supportive. And from my dad's aspect or point, it was his way of contributing, right? He wasn't going to be the dad that was going to sit us down and like help us with our homework. He was the dad that was like, you're going to building us goals in the backyard, right? And before we could even do our homework, which is like the so opposite of most parents. He was like, you're going to go out and like practice soccer before you come in and do your homework, right? Because it was like his way of showing his love and support and like pushing us to be the best we could and hopefully get scholarships, and it panned out. But I mean, looking back, it was quite bonkers the way he went about it. I think from my mom and Susan thought process, they were like, this is a little bonkers, but they were also like, great. She's really good at soccer. My brother was a great soccer player as well. Fantastic. If this is like a ticket to help them get into college and I would have needed support in terms of financially, it was like the best way. Everyone was like, keep going. You're great. Let's go. And then everyone slowly but surely got on the bandwagon in terms of like, as I continue to play on more youth national teams and then played at UVA. And then of course, when you get to the national team, all the parents are like, hell yes, their time to party, right? So they're like, yes, like it's amazing all of a sudden. But internally, in terms of that drive, really stemmed from, I mean, I think it's in some ways like a lot of us, right? Like a lot of pain. Like I wanted to, no disrespect at all to my dad and stepmom, and I love their support and the time and everything that they have given me. But really, I wanted to be with my mom, you know, and I wanted, and I didn't see her very much growing up. And so for me, soccer was like that outlet, right? It was like the way I was like, I love this. I was athletic. I love playing sport. I wanted to run around and play. And my brother Chris was, as I mentioned, a fantastic soccer player as well. And we're only 18 months apart. So I was doing everything that he was doing. And so just from an early age, there was this love for this game. And it was a, such a wonderful outlet for me to, for a long time, escape from any sort of like feelings that I had about like being super sad. Right. And also I think with a lot of kids too, I mean, even though it's false, we don't get our self-worth from sport. It was a, that's what I felt growing up too. It was like, yes, okay, I'm worthy. I'm this good soccer player, right? And so in many ways, that's what fueled that drive. It was like, I am good enough and I'm going to prove it. Yeah.
Well, you retired a few years ago. So what are you passionate about these days? You were already really starting to speak out more throughout your professional career, but I know that retiring is not stopping that at all. So I would love to hear more about what you're passionate about today.
Yeah, well, in a couple of ways, speaking out and getting more comfortable in that realm has been heightened since, because I always say that the national team is an interesting environment because there is such a platform, right? It's like one of the most loved sporting teams in the world. Not just in terms of women, but on the men's side too. I mean, you can argue our players are way more visible than any of the men's national team players and some other sports as well. And so you have this unbelievable platform, but at the same time, it's scary to speak out. And there's a lot of fear in that because there's X amount of contracts, right? And really, our national team is one of the only ways to make a viable living playing soccer. I mean, it's the discrepancies between our NWSL, our National Women's Soccer League, our pro league, and playing for the national team is remarkable. I mean, the differences in the money that you can make. So if you're just playing in the NWSL, it is such a different income than it is if you're playing in the NWSL plus playing with our national team. So once you start getting your dipping your toes in that, it becomes in a way a very interesting path to navigate, because the fear does set in. It's like, you don't want to lose, you obviously want to play. It's what you've worked for your entire life and you want to compete at the highest level. But then also there's this like making a living aspect that sets fear in and not speaking out, right? And you're part of this team that's very visible. And so it feels like there's only like a handful of players that have the ability to speak out. And everybody else is kind of like treading water in terms of like, okay, if I want to speak out, right? Like, I mean, even if you look at Megan in terms of kneeling a few years ago, right? Not one person was going to kneel with her, right? Even if they felt exactly the same way, just as passionate. But you don't see it. And Kaepernick, look at Kaepernick too, right? I mean, he's out of work. He's not playing, right? I mean, so you're seeing, and so you're seeing that within our national team, it's an interesting thing in terms of like using that platform and not. And I found it wasn't until the latter part of my career that I really realized that I actually had a platform while playing. And then navigating that and how I was going to use that. And then became more comfortable with that, especially once I've finished playing. And so anyway, long way to say what I'm passionate about is still speaking a ton about LGBTQ. And then I've really started to dive deep into a lot of social justice and the role that white women have to play in terms of social justice and race. And
yeah. Yeah. Two organizations that you're really involved with are both Athlete Ally and then that Equal Play, Equal Pay. Those are two causes that it sounds like clearly are thread throughout your career.
Yeah. I mean, Athlete Ally is so dear to my heart, and the fact that they were really the first organization that I got involved in terms of realizing, okay, there is a platform. This is something that I care deeply about. Athlete Ally was that first organization that gave me that opportunity. And I love that because the work that they do is so important, because it's based around like education and education of younger kids, right? And focusing on them and on their language that they're using and how they're showing up in schools. And so the work that Athlete Ally does, I think is remarkable. And it's all about inclusion and equality and ending homophobia, transphobia, both in and outside of sport. And I love it. And it's such a wonderful group, and it's continued to expand. And we have a good ambassador group that has a lot of soccer players that have gotten on board, which is massive. And then also with the Equal Playing Field Initiative, which yes, was linked to Equal Pay, which was through our women's national team. The Equal Playing Field Initiative was started by two women who, you know, had experienced inequality through soccer and just started coming up with this idea of like, it's a metaphor for the mountain we have to climb in terms of women's equality, not just in soccer, but across the world in all sport. And came up with this idea, let's play this Guinness Book of World Record highest elevation match on top of Kilimanjaro, and let's gather up some friends. And then what happened was that they started getting their friends involved, and then the word just started spreading, and then they started getting more and more high profile athletes involved, and they had to tell their friends, sorry, you can't come. And yeah, it was like a 9-day trek up Kilimanjaro, and it was the worst soccer match you've ever seen. It was like beach soccer at high elevation. It was terrible and amazing and so amazing at the same time, and life-changing, as cliche as it may sound, but it really was.
My last question that I have is for any, well, I guess there's two. For any parents listening, do you have any advice for how parents can really best cheer on and, you know, and encourage any of their kids who are engaged in any sort of, you know, sports or athletics? And then also for any youth, you know, or young people, Any, you know, advice for anybody who is interested in continuing and pursuing and, you know, excelling in whatever their chosen sport or athleticism might be?
Yeah, I think with the parent thing, it's one, it's not about the parents, and two, just give the kids choice, right? Because even today when I'm working with youth, just asking the kids, are they enjoying what they're doing? And even parents just asking themselves, why am I, whether they're actually doing this or not, but like, why do I want my kids to participate in sport? Why do I feel the need that they have to be the best, right? Because sport is about participation. It's about camaraderie. It's about competition, not amongst the person next to you. It's about like competition with yourself. Can I get better? But it's not about like, I'm better than you, right? And I feel like that's what we make sport into being. And that's why everyone's so crazy, right? It's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be, and then if you put in extra work and you're enjoying yourself, then that's how players, and there's luck involved too, and right timing. And that's how we see the best come about, right? But like this whole thing of like parents making or wanting, finding worth in their kids by being the best or playing on the best teams is nonsense. So chill out, let them enjoy and ask questions. But if you do have a kid that wants to pursue it, I mean, for me, a little background of that is my dad was one of the crazy parents, right? And so in seventh grade, I was like, sorry, I'm not playing soccer anymore. I'm done. I'm going to become this famous actress. And I took acting class and I was terrible. And that time off was so important though, because for me, it allowed me to step away and realize how much I did love the game. And then I was able to return and everything from that point on was on my own terms. I trained all the time. I did everything because I wanted to. And then prior to that though, was like, my dad was like, you're going to do this. You're going to do that. You're going to do this. But after it, it was like, no, I want to train. I have this desire to be the best that I can be. And I'm going to see that through. And that's really what fueled me. So it's like, if you love it, then seek out people that can help you. Seek out coaches that can help you. Watch video, right? Do the little extra things that practice on your own. That is the best, right? It's practicing on your own. Get lost in the game. Have fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening. If you enjoy Outspoken Voices, I have another podcast you should check out, The Gayest Show on Birth. Kate and Corrine take you through their journey all the way through pregnancy to being brand new parents. It's a fun and frank conversation about queer pregnancy and parenthood.
Well, that's all right, Mama.
Hey, I'm Kate Levy.
And I'm Corrine Levy, and this is The Gayest Show on Birth, a bi-weekly podcast where we take you on our journey through IVF and now, spoiler alert, parenthood.
We did reciprocal IVF using Corrine's egg, my uterus, and an anonymous sperm donor. We talk about everything from how we chose our donor.
It's like weird online dating.
To navigating fertility treatments and having a baby as a gay couple. And more about our bodies than we ever thought possible.
Plus other things like our dogs, how much everything costs, and all of the amazing
and not so amazing
questions that we've been asked. And we answer any questions that you might have.
So tune in every other Tuesday for The Gayest Show on Birth.
You can listen to all the episodes at thegayestshowonbirth.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Again, thank you for joining us today. Please rate, review, and subscribe to Outspoken Voices. You can find Outspoken Voices on our website, SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. You can find Family Equality Council at familyequality.org and on Facebook and Instagram at Family Equality and on Twitter at family_equality. Until next time, remember that love, justice, family, and equality is what brings our families together.